Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Third point, that the army has the horrible task of ensuring security. Prisoners got out of prison. It's the security force, which is over a million, has been disbanded. It's a criminal act. I don't know who did that.
Mohamed Al-Baradei, now reportedly becoming the consensus leader, at least for the moment, of the opposition coalition in Egypt. Mona El-Tahawi is back with us now, Egyptian-born journalist here in New York with a very big Twitter following on the Egypt crisis. Hi, Mona. I know you're so busy right now. Thank you for giving us some more time today.
Hi, Brian. Always good to be with you on the show, because whenever we get together, we talk about revolution, so I like it.
And one way to tell what's going on in the Mideast is by monitoring social media. Egypt shut down Facebook and Twitter over the weekend because it wanted to stop that expression. We will see now if anything is getting through anyway, and look to social media for clues about what other countries may be in for popular uprisings next. So joining us from Bahrain as well is Amira Al-Husseini, Mideast Regional Editor for the group Global Voices Online, an international community of bloggers who report on blogs and citizen media around the world. As I say, she is in Bahrain. Amira, thank you so much for doing this. Hello from New York.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. And you're on with Mona El-Tahawi. And Mona, I'll start with you. I saw you on CNN yesterday, and I think you suggested that the pulling of the police off the street, which we just heard Al-Baradei lament, was a trick by Mubarak to encourage street crime and try to get the people to want him back or want to crack down on the protests for security in their homes. Are you making that charge?
I am absolutely making that charge, Brian, because, you know, you mentioned that they shut down Twitter, Facebook. They actually shut down the entire internet. The Hosni Mubarak regime shut down the entire internet as part of this kind of psychological warfare against Egyptians' uprising. What happened with the police force is, for the first 4 days of this uprising against the Mubarak regime, his security forces, which are known for their brutality, just unleashed this force against protesters. Rubber bullets, water cannons, tear gas, horrendous amounts of tear gas. And when that did not stem the tide of the uprising, the police were very mysteriously, the security forces were very mysteriously just disappeared. And what you began to hear of, and then the armed forces were called onto the streets, and what I began to hear from friends in Egypt who could get through was that, by their landlines, was that they were picking up looters who were going around wreaking havoc and handing them over to the armed forces, would find on them identification papers that connected them to the security forces. So this is a deliberate attempt at scaring people into falling back into line and wanting the Mubarak regime. And it's failing, because what happened was ordinary Egyptians started setting up neighborhood watch committees to protect their neighborhoods, and they realized they could protect themselves. And now the police are coming back, you know, too late, because people are taking care of themselves. And the number of people has continued to rise. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of Egyptians now in main squares across several cities across the country. And they've called for tomorrow for a million-man march across the country to tell Hosni Mubarak one more time, we want you to go.
Amira Al-Husseini, despite the shuttering of the internet in Egypt, are you able to get social media messages of any kind coming out of Egypt, or do you have to rely on ones coming from other countries at this point?
We do have access to people who are tweeting from Egypt. There is a loophole in the blackout. It's not a total blackout, but the first day we were in the dark completely, and what we did was we went back to basics. We relied on news agencies and television stations, which were broadcasting the developments on the ground live. And what we did was people on Twitter and Facebook were watching TV, writing what they were seeing, and coming back to us. But we had no contact with Egypt whatsoever, except for what the journalists on the ground were transferring to us.
Mona, where does Mohamed Al-Baradei come in your opinion? He's back in his home country and hoping to lead. It does seem like the various disparate factions of the opposition are uniting around him as a leader at the moment. But he's also not lived in Egypt for a long time. I've seen tweets and other things that say Mubarak is respectable, but he's not one of us anymore. So is he the guy, at least for some transitional leadership role?
You know, it's interesting in that people have had different opinions on it, obviously, and that is exactly the best way to describe the uprising. It's been a grassroots uprising that has pulled people from all different political backgrounds in Egypt. And Mohamed al-Baradei, you will find, I think you meant Baradei was the one who was respectable, but people didn't feel that he knew Egypt that well.
Correct.
Rather than Mubarak. Because what I'm hearing from Egyptians, and, you know, as an Egyptian who is watching this from New York, I salute, first of all, the courage of those who have sacrificed their lives and who continue to go out on the street. So I'm trying best to listen to what they want. And what I've heard is that he has some following among some people who are out there in the protests, but he by no means began this protest, and he's not a leader of this protest. For those who don't follow him, they want him to remember that. And he, to be honest, and to his credit, he's never said, I am the reason this happened or I am the leader. But what I'm hearing is that because no one wants Egypt to fall into chaos, and because we know that there are many people capable of leading Egypt out of the Mubarak regime, some people are talking about some kind of coalition to bring many people together. And that's what we saw happening yesterday, or at least the beginning, because Ayman Noor, a veteran Egyptian politician who spent 10 years in the Egyptian parliament until he was imprisoned by Mubarak for running against him in the presidential campaign, Ayman Noor and other figures from Egypt's opposition have, together with al-Baradei, united to form a committee that wants to start talks with the armed forces on the condition that the armed forces do not stage an army coup and allow for, or rather step back and allow for a civilian interim government. I don't know, obviously, if this is going to be possible because Mubarak is hanging in there, you know, very stubbornly. But I think many people are beginning to realize that, okay, we might not all support Baradei, but let's look at him as part of some kind of coalition that gives voice to everybody taking part in the street protest, because this must not be about one man. We don't want to go from one man, Mubarak, to another one man. We want it to reflect all those voices.
Amira, you wrote on your blog that your Twitter feed is abuzz with hashtags calling for revolutions from across the region. Can you give me the range of some of those?
There are hashtags for almost every other country in the region. It's like we have a calendar of events for fireworks across the region over the next few weeks. We have Syria penciled in for February 5. I need to look. Bahrain for February 14. So that's two in a row. And then we have events scheduled in for places like Morocco and Algeria.
I didn't know you plan a revolution like, weeks in advance.
I know. This is what everybody was saying about the uprising in Egypt. How can you have a Facebook event and be invited to a revolution? And what happened was it did start on a Facebook, as a Facebook invite, and there was word on the street, but we cannot attribute what's happening in Egypt today just to social media. What's happened is that there are pent-up reasons, and there are pent-up emotions, and there is anger, and there are all those social and economic factors which made people reach the boiling point that we see today. I've been to Egypt, so I know Egyptians. I've never seen this anger in my life before. And people are not afraid. People in this part of the world live in police states. So you are afraid. You're afraid of criticizing the government. You're afraid of facing off with the police. You're afraid of being next to army personnel. You live in fear. When we're children, if people want to scare us, they tell us, I'll call a policeman for you, so you stop crying. But the courage of Egyptians, what we've been seeing over the past few days, has been amazing, and it's won the solidarity of people from across the region. Everybody is cheering on for Egypt.
Is there any sense that you could tell, Amira, as you monitor social media from around the region, from where you are in Bahrain, which country might be the next to really, you know, overflow into something like this or like happened in Tunisia? Did you say Syria had a February 5th something planned?
It does have a February 5th date for it. But the Syrians I've spoken to, so we can't just go and announce things unless we verify things. with Egypt, we've been covering Egypt for 5 years, and we have a very long-standing relationship with the activists and bloggers on the ground. So when they said they had an event for the 25th of January, we knew it was true, and we took it at face value.
Mm-hmm.
But with Syria, you never know what could happen.
Mm-hmm.
If, indeed, there is a February 5 event scheduled for a revolution in Syria to start, then what we'll see is the internet will be blocked from February 1.
And Mona Al-Tahawi, on Syria, some people say that Syria's strongman may have a little more insulation from public outrage because of his lack of affiliation with the United States and Israel, unlike Egypt. Any clues to whether that's true from your own understanding of the region?
Obviously, each Arab country has its own specific conditions. We're not this, you know, the Arab street that so many in the media like to use. We are thousands of Arab streets. So having said that each country is different, I also have to demolish this idea that the uprising, this revolution in the making in Egypt, has anything to do with the United States or Israel. This is an issue that is about Egypt. This is Egypt focusing on Egypt, and what it's about is, you know, yes, Hosni Mubarak has been one of the major allies of successive U.S. administrations for decades now, and they knew very well that he was a dictator, and they knew very well that he ran a police state. But what this revolution in Egypt is about is getting rid of his tyranny and getting rid of his dictatorship of 30 years. It has nothing to do with the United States and Israel. It has everything to do with Egypt. It has everything to do with Egypt saying, this is our time for freedom and dignity. We demand to be free. Amira mentioned that people aren't scared anymore. This is pivotal. Once you kill that fear, that is it. And this is what's happening in Egypt, and this is what is infecting the entire region.
Well, and yet, Mona, I have seen some protesters in TV footage over the weekend rail against the United States and rail against America's support of Israel. And I realize this is out of crowds of tens or hundreds of thousands of people, a couple of folks interviewed on television. And yet there are some who are articulating this in so many words that the U.S. propped up Mubarak because he kept peace with Israel. They're angry at the United States for that. Is that not a thought, as far as you could tell, that's close to top of mind for many Egyptians in addition to the domestic concerns?
Absolutely, Egyptians are angry that the United States has propped up Mubarak because the successive, you know, Hosni Mubarak has been president since 1981, and during that time, the United States has had 5 presidents. So that shows you the kind of double standards that Egyptians do hold the United States responsible for. Because while those U.S. administrations have advocated for democracy and freedom and human rights, they've paid lip service to this, while at the same time, being an ally, a major ally of someone who they knew very well was doing the complete opposite of that. So, of course, Egyptians know, pretending that Egyptians don't resent and aren't angry at the fact that the United States propped up their dictator. I'm saying that the uprising started against many factors in Egypt that, as Amira mentioned, have made people angry. Unemployment, poverty, political repression, torture. You know, one of the reasons January the 25th was chosen as this date for the revolution was that it coincided with Police Day in Egypt. And Mubarak's police forces are out of hand. Systematic police brutality. And one of the groups that organized it on Facebook was a group called the Khalid Said Group. And it was in the memory of a young man beaten to death by Egyptian police. So these are direct concerns that every Egyptian feels. Of course, Egyptians are angry that the United States has propped up Mubarak. And they continue to wonder and look at how the U.S. administration is tongue-tied when they should clearly be on the people, on the side of the people getting rid of tyranny. But this is Egypt. This is about Egypt. It's Egypt's moment, is my point.
Mona Al-Tahawi with us, columnist and public speaker on Arab and Muslim issues, originally from Egypt, and Amira Al-Husseini, Mideast Regional Editor for Global Voices Online, an international community of bloggers who report on blogs and citizen media around the world. She is in Bahrain. And E in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling, E.
Hi. This question was for David Sanger, but perhaps your two guests may be able to answer this.
Okay.
I thought, I could be mistaken, but the former, you know, in when these kinds of events happen, people are looking for opposition leaders and so forth, and Mohamed Al-Berdeh has arisen. And I was just kind of curious, that wasn't the former Secretary General of the UN, Boutros Boutros-Ghali, Egyptian? And if so, I'm kind of curious, whatever happened to him, and when he retired, did he ever go back to Egypt? Was he involved in Egyptian politics? And I'm just kind of curious, and what is his sort of like position in
yes,
all of this?
I think Mona's even better placed to answer that question than David Sanger was. Mona?
Thank you, Brian. You know, Egyptians, in the same way as Tunisians, have made very clear, want nothing to do with anybody who was involved with the Mubarak regime. And Boutros Ghali served as a Secretary of State for the Mubarak regime. So I don't think they would want him. Egyptians want someone who is completely clean of the stain of this regime. Now, Mohamed Abaradei is one. Ayman Nour is another. There's another Egyptian who won a Nobel Nobel Prize, and his name is Ahmed Zouail. He is a scientist who commands a lot of respect in Egypt for being this great mind, who spent many years studying abroad. I think he was at Caltech for a while, and has a Nobel Prize. So my point is, people talk about chaos and who's going to come next. Egypt is a country of 80 million. We can produce leaders. Mubarak is not Egypt. What Mubarak has done is he has exiled or sent into jail any opposition because he wants people to think I'm the only one. I am confident Egypt will come up with an alternative, many alternatives.
And Almira, you wrote that you're seeing an influx of social media reactions even from the most downtrodden people in the region, and that makes you worry for their safety. Who are those folks?
Like, without getting them into trouble, the Saudis, for instance. Freedom of expression is close to zero in Saudi Arabia, and we have Saudi people rallying behind the Egyptians. This uprising of people is contagious. People online have been rallying behind Tunisia from the minute it started on December 17. And the wave is continuing across the region. And by people online, I mean people from all walks of life, from all ages, from different professions, from different backgrounds, including people on Twitter tweets who are working for the governments in the region.
So, Mona, uprisings are contagious, Almira said. And I know one of your main points has been that every country has its own domestic conditions, but there is a certain contagion of what started in Tunisia now has spread to Egypt. And looking around all kinds of press reports, I'm seeing now that there are rumblings in Syria and Jordan and Sudan and Bahrain. How contagious is it? Where is this headed as far as you could tell?
You know, what is contagious is this killing fear. People have killed the fear inside them and now have seen this possibility. If Tunisia excited the Arab imagination and resuscitated the Arab imagination, what's happening in Egypt now, I like to put this way, Hosni Mubarak is our Berlin Wall. Once he falls, and he is falling right now, once Hosni Mubarak's fall is complete, the rest of the Arab world will be free to also fight for its freedom and dignity in the way that Eastern Europe did once the Berlin Wall fell. And I want to stress to your listeners, Brian, that this is an incredibly exciting moment in the history of our entire region. You hear so many negative reports about looting and violence. I want people to focus on freedom and dignity and how it's our turn in the Arab world to be free, finally.
Blogger Mona El-Tahawi, you can follow her very active Twitter stream on Twitter under her name, Mona El-Tahawi, and Almira Al-Husseini, Mideast Regional Editor for Global Voices Online, a community of bloggers internationally who report on citizen media around the world. She is in the nation of Bahrain. Thank you both very much for joining us on this historic day.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank
and hello,
Brian.
Almira. We know each other.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.